Okay, here we go. Episode one. Welcome to Furcast Features, in-depth conversations with people in the furry fandom. I'm Paradox.
I'm Jesse.
And we have known each other for way too long.
And yet, this is the first time we've thought, you know, let's do a show together, given all the experience we have. Almost 10 years podcasting? Me, over 10 years podcasting? And we were like,
I don't know, Jesse. I'm thinking maybe we should kick this show back to the planning stage for another couple years.
Yeah, that's the meme that I like to... It's been the meme even planning this show. I like to plan everything, and you like to plan nothing.
I'm actually really excited, though, to kick off this series, especially with the two interviews that we've been working on so far. In the next episode, we've got TC Fox, which I'm really excited for. He works in InfoSec. He's got way too many legs. And in this episode, we've got Hino from Megaplex.
Yeah, Megaplex is the 8th-ranked furry con in the entire country, and as far as attendance, it's standing at about 2,400 people as of July 2018. And we sat down with Hino a couple weeks before the 2018 edition of Megaplex to really ask him what it takes to run a fur con in a climate like Florida, not just weather-wise, but culturally anyway. Now, it's interesting because, Paradox, you've never actually been to Megaplex.
Yeah, and it was interesting to me because when we started the interview, I was kind of wondering how that was going to go, right? Because you've been to Megaplex many times, and I've yet to be, but I think we both actually got quite a lot out of the interview despite that.
You know, the nice thing about fur cons is that everyone's five hops away from everyone else, and you find these cons, no matter where they are, bind people together, and really we're all going through the same experience, just in different places. The interesting thing to me is that some of the struggles and some of the challenges that face Megaplex are very, very unique, and you'll find that some of the stories that Hino tells could only happen at a con like Megaplex, and some of them are amazing and some of them are horrifying, and it was quite an experience to listen to him talk about it.
Megaplex seems like such a unique, fun time, and I actually really look forward to going now that I've talked with Hino.
The number one thing I wanted to know, though, was Hino's reaction to the thing I get most when I even mention Megaplex to people who are not from the South. How the hell does this make sense? A fur con in the summer in Florida. What is this?
We actually get that a lot. We're well aware it's part of the hottest time of the year. If we could bring the convention at a decent price for our attendees any other time of the year, we would. We've looked at later in the summer to try to get closer to the cooler weather. Ultimately, it puts us right at the high end of hurricane season. And we've looked at putting it right at the beginning of the year. What ends up happening is the room rates go up to $250, $350 a night. And none of our attendees are going to pay that, but we still want to bring it. We still want to have a good event. But we try to find hotels that, A, can fit us. It doesn't always work out that it's entirely indoors. We know. We try very hard, and there's a very long process for looking at hotels and comparing them to each other. But there's a lot of contractual things that come into play that will eventually rule out a hotel or make a hotel a much better option.
So what happened last year with Megaplex traditionally, the nice thing about it is it has been kind of an all-indoor event. This past year, the con moved to a venue that was a resort, which is wonderful because you get a lot more space to play with. But it also meant that there was a lot of walking from venue to venue outside in the heat. I personally have heard from a lot of fursuiters who have expressed concern, and one or two who have very directly said, I can't go back if that's going to be the venue it's at. Could you talk a bit about what exactly happened on your end, on the hotel's end, and what you're doing right now to try to address those issues?
Sure. Well, originally we looked at, I think it was roughly 60 different hotels. Most of them declined to host our event entirely, which brought it down to about 6. We started looking at the pricing. And There's a few things that hotels will do to get money. One is they'll have a higher room rate. Another one is they have a what we call a food and beverage minimum, which means we have to buy so much food and beverage to be served within the convention. And I'll tell you, we got proposals with over $200,000 food and beverage minimums, which we can't do. We had other hotels that said, well, it would have to be a full buyout. Well, how many rooms do you have? Well, we've got 2,000 rooms. We can't do that. Ultimately, it came down to two hotels. Both of them, unfortunately, were resort-style hotels. We looked at, okay, well, what about the convention space? One convention space we couldn't secure in any way. The convention space itself was a main thoroughway between the lobby and a restaurant. And the other one was getting new space. There were a lot of great promises. They told us that, you know, all of our attendees would be right over there by the convention space. All this new build out was going to be done. And we said, you know what? We can make this work. We know it's outdoors. It's not going to be great. We're going to put headless lounges in both buildings, but we should be limited to these two spaces. And by how we set up the rooms, we can limit the back and forth. Well, we signed the contract, and then dates started going by. And it's not entirely on the hotel. Part of it is on the building crew, and part of it's on the weather. We get a lot of rain, which shuts down construction. It just kept delaying the completion of the space. And ultimately, it made a large portion of the space unavailable to us. The hotel did try to help as much as they could. They actually moved two other events out of the hotel.
Oh, wow.
To other properties and gave us all available space on the property.
And I mean, what was that like for you? I don't know when you found out. I mean, did you just show up on site and went, oh no? Were you worried that that would really harm the event, or were you kind of just figuring, you know what, this is going to be a rough one, but we'll work it out?
We definitely were worried. We made walkthroughs of the hotel starting at about the 6-month point. It was becoming more and more apparent, and yeah, it really does increase the stress level. We knew it wasn't going to be great. We did the absolute best we could, and it also didn't help that when people checked in online, the system would give them options to select their room. Well, the system was moving them out of the rooms that they had been assigned to and into the space that was outside of our block.
Oh, jeez.
Because our block had been fully assigned. So people were getting shoved at the other end of the hotel. So it compounded the problem.
So what would you say to people who are right now asking themselves, is this an event that I want to make the trip out to, given some of the concerns and some of the challenges of last year? What would you say to those people who are trying to determine whether or not this is a good gamble to make?
Well, we've made a lot of changes this year. The newly constructed space is done. I've seen it. I've been in it. It's actually done. No more waiting. It gives us a lot more space. So the majority of all of our spaces, instead of being spread across three buildings, are now only between the tower and the convention center, and we've tried to limit as much of the back and forth as possible. There's going to be a lot more space to socialize in the new conference space, where you won't have to go outside nearly as much, and we're making even more improvements next year, and those will be announced at closing ceremonies.
So, I mean, from an attendee perspective, you know, what's new this year? Something that maybe even you're excited about?
So this year, you know, we've got some great guests of honor. We've got Nice the Singing Dog. We've got Paco Panda. We've also got, you know, Fox Amore and Pepper are coming back. And Alkali is joining us for the first time.
Oh, no.
He's going to be doing...
That's yeah. Quite a list there. That's, wow.
Alkali is always a fun time.
Oh, yeah. Alkali is great.
How do you guys deal with remaining family friendly? Like, I mean, well, obviously offering stuff for everybody, but, remaining family friendly at the same time.
That's always a difficult fight. There's a lot of families at the hotels that may not even be with us, but we also have a really high number of minors that come to the convention. So we have to constantly make sure that, you know, we've got the right programming, stuff that people are going to be interested in. But at the same time, we also have to be careful on what attire we allow. And that's always going to be a little bit of a fight. But we've been experimenting more and more with letting a little bit more adult in, because the new generation has come in. They're a little bit more open than previous generations have been. So it's a little bit of a shift, and we're trying to shift along with it.
The atmosphere at Megaplex is the most relaxed thing. Now, I haven't been to BLFC. People say that's relaxed too, but I've never seen anything that feels quite like Megaplex does. So how do you explain the relaxed atmosphere and the relaxed management that Megaplex is so well known for across the FurCons and at least the States anyway?
It really starts with our staff. A lot of our staff, you know, have been employed at one of the parks in the Orlando area, or, you know, came from customer service. A lot of that's about making sure the guest is happy, about not letting the guest see when something's going wrong. No matter what convention you're at, there's always something that could be done better or isn't going right. It's about not letting it affect the attendees. And we really focus on that.
Oh, that's very good. I like that. In 2016, I'm actually curious if we could talk about that. Wasn't that, I believe it was your 20th anniversary, right?
That was actually our 15th anniversary.
What made that year so special? Because that was a pretty amazing year.
It was the first year that we had the full run of a hotel. Megaplex had never had that before. It was a really great hotel for our size at the time, but we sold out in 14 minutes all of the hotel rooms we had available.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I had never seen that before. And we had actually opened up hotel booking January 1st thinking people are going to be too busy, you know, having fun. We know there's a lot of hype, but no one's going to, you know, go out of their way to make sure they book, they get a hotel room on, you know, New Year's. Oh, we were wrong. We were horribly, horribly wrong. We got so many people saying, you know, I didn't even drink on New Year's Eve because I didn't want to risk missing hotel booking. As weird as it sounds, that was kind of good to hear, at least on my part, because that means somebody was so concerned that they wouldn't be able to get to our event that they changed their behavior for one day. And then I go, oh, wait, but they didn't get a room. And then I feel horrible. And we outgrew that hotel 2 months before we even got there. We were already going, we're not going to have enough space.
Well, and it is good that, you know, the hotel was completely booked with furries. You guys had the big awoo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of curious how you guys afforded all that. And, you know, I hope a lot of all those registrations helped.
OPD must have been horrible. Those fines.
You know, we actually made a joke on Twitter. We did the math, and we did 350 times all of our attendees, and we put it on Twitter, and we actually had people going, the city actually charged you? We're like, no, it was a joke. And we got that for months after the con.
Oh, no.
That people would email us going, I can't believe the city would do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, okay, some people need to learn to take a joke, but this is kind of funny.
I mean, there were a lot of people on Twitter and from my perspective who were a little nervous about that whole awoo thing because, you know, yeah, okay, it's fun and cute, but it's a bad reputation. But I mean, you know, it seems like the whole hotel was booked with furries. Joking aside, did you guys have any repercussions from that? Like, did the hotel care at all? Or?
No, the hotel thought it was hilarious. The only thing they did ask is that the next night when, you know, we didn't have the entire hotel, that we keep our attendees from doing that.
I want to just, again, be clear about how crazy this event was. Am I right? Did they supply not only food in the hotel, but also free cookies and alcohol? Free alcohol for furries. How is that sustainable?
Yeah, We warned them. We warned them. It's funny to say this, but we told them, you need to be well-stocked because furries will descend on you like a plague of locusts and eat everything you have and drink everything you have. And we...
So did they run out in 5 seconds or 10 seconds?
We didn't disappoint. They did actually... They purchased 3 times their normal alcohol for the weekend.
Oh, goodness.
And they ran through about half of it on the first night.
There are obviously challenges for any con that you guys just can't control. There was an incident a few years ago where an attendee fell off a balcony. And at the time, people were pretty shocked by that.
I think we all were.
When something like that happens that's out of your control, it was after the con had concluded, it was completely out of nowhere. What does that do to you guys as a con? What does that do to your reputation? How do you guys respond to that? How do you guys have to respond to that?
Well, I mean, you know, we are very happy that he fully recovered. We were really surprised when we got informed. And, you know, no matter how well you plan, no matter what you plan for, we try our best. You're not going to get every incident. It could have been far worse, but we do everything we can as a group of volunteers to make sure our attendees are as safe as possible and still able to have fun. Luckily, you know, repercussion-wise, we didn't really have too many issues. The hotel was very understanding. They obviously were concerned for his well-being as well. We know that people make mistakes, things happen, and we need to move forward.
Was there anything you were concerned about and luckily didn't happen?
I mean, there's always a small concern about that. Our primary focus was on the attendees' well-being. It would be a lie to say we weren't concerned that this was going to become a social media nightmare or have lasting consequences with hotels. And honestly, the Embassy Suites actually wanted us back.
Wow.
After this, and we definitely would have if we had space to grow into. But being that we had already sold out the entire hotel one time in 14 minutes, it wasn't going to last for another year.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to reputation and things effectively out of your control, you know, it's not the first time you guys have dealt with some of that. I mean, you know, when it comes to like CSI in the early 2000s, I mean, was there anything that affected you there that you had to deal with?
For quite a while, we had to be very careful on how we described our event. A lot of our board members worked at Disney and they were not fans of furries in general. You know, a lot has changed over the years on that. But, you know, part of that was from the images depicted in CSI. A lot of people saw it and realized, you know, this is a piece of fiction and didn't think twice about it. Some people thought this was an accurate depiction. We went for many years as Pawpet Megaplex, focusing on performing arts and puppetry and mascotting, and not so much on the furry aspect. And it took many years to really be able in Orlando to say, well, actually, we're a furry convention and not get weird looks.
Do you think the way you guys had to deal with that was different than the way other cons had to deal with that?
No, I mean, I think everyone had some level of that. For us, because we're right next to Disney and Universal, and because they're really big on having their characters out as mascots in various spaces for photo ops, it kind of hits a little bit closer to home here because we do have those mascots everywhere. And so Disney and Universal are a lot more concerned about people mistaking one of our characters as one of their characters. Disney does employ so many people around here. It was a much higher risk, I think, in this area than it was for a lot of the rest of the United States.
Do you think that that comes into play when you go to deal with hotels? Things like, you know, the fandomtation?
No, it does. There is a large chain that it is very difficult to get them to do any fandom convention anymore. Big chains tend to go through time periods where they want the fandom conventions and then they want more corporate events. And it kind of goes back and forth. When we started having issues finding hotels, we actually brought in some outside assistance in finding hotels and getting the contracts. You know, someone who books a lot more events than just furry conventions, that has a little bit more bargaining power than we do. There is actually a group called the FCLR, the Furry Convention Leadership Roundtable, and it is comprised of roughly 3 members from every major convention and quite a few of the smaller ones around the world. We discuss, you know, these are some of the issues we're seeing. Are you seeing it too? Well, yeah, I'm seeing it. Well, how did you deal with it? And, you know, kind of bounce ideas off of each other. Now, obviously, we're very careful about what we can talk about. It helps when a lot of the conventions can band together, especially nowadays where there's almost a convention every weekend. And some weekends, there's 5 or 6 conventions around the world going on. It's a really good group that has actually really helped the furry conventions survive.
The situation that comes to mind is the demise of Rainforest a couple of years ago. That was the last, I think, really public situation that I can remember hearing talk of implications. Can you talk about exactly what the demise of a con like that and the way it broke down has done to the rest of the FurCon community?
Sure. I mean, any convention fears seeing another local fandom convention fail, because fandom conventions in general are higher risk to hotels and to convention centers. One, because we're not a professional group. They look at it and go, well, they're not really giving us as much money as this corporate convention is, but we don't have anything this weekend, so I guess we could bring them in. And so we're kind of the, well, if I've got availability, sure, why not? But when you see larger conventions just die, the entire hotel world takes notice. Another one I can think of is DashCon, and how much of a dumpster fire that ended up becoming. And that wasn't even in the furry fandom, but we still feel some pain from that when looking for hotels. So we have to be very professional on how we approach hotels. We have to explain exactly what we are, what we do, why we do it. We kind of have to cross our fingers to an extent to go, hey, give us a chance. We're not that convention that's going to close down next week.
You started in 2015, no? As con chair.
Yeah, I think that was my first year.
I was constantly hearing in that era about people at Megaplex dealing with another children's group that was moving through the hotel and always staying there and raising their own complaints. But you all dealt with that in such a magnificent way.
There are groups in Orlando that bring international kids who may not have the opportunity to go to the parks with their families, but they bring them out to Orlando and they treat them to several days at Disney or Universal, depending on the group. But unfortunately, because they're international, there's different cultural interactions. You know, not every group meshes well. We did have some issues with the group that was at the hotel. After the first year, we actually sat down with them and said, you know, what can we do? What can we do to make this better? What can we do to relieve the stress on our attendees while also relieving the burden on your chaperones and the feeling of isolation? Because the kids were basically, because we were there, they weren't allowed to leave their rooms. It really came down to, as we said, let's figure out a way forward. We sat down with them and we planned out a character meet and greet for them, where we brought specially selected fursuiters that we know were kid friendly. We had were able to do background checks on them, and we brought them up, and the hotel provided popcorn and drinks for the kids. We gave them about a half hour, 45 minutes to really get to meet some of the characters that people had brought with them to the convention, and the kids absolutely loved it. We had one kid who initially he saw it and he was just kind of hiding in the corner and he didn't speak any English. I went up to him and I had one of the chaperones translate for me, and we had, you know, I'm like, what's wrong? And he was a little scared, and I said, well, they're not going to bite. You know, is there one that you would like to meet? He said, yeah, and he pointed out one. And so we kind of pulled that character aside for him so that he could meet the character. And it really was, he came out of his shell, and within 5 minutes, he was playing around with all of the different characters and really just enjoying himself. And the fact that we could bring that to, I believe most of these kids that week were from, I believe it was close to 70 children from South America, was really, really impressive and really, really heartwarming.
That's pretty amazing, just, you know, getting to see that and be a part of that. In 2015, I heard about a guest of honor disaster. You know, you had one guest of honor left after fewer of the other ones, you know, got sick and or didn't show up. And then this one guy showed up, Fizz Otter, totally not a good friend of mine, totally not biased, who couldn't even speak. So, you know, what's that?
We like to pick our guests of honor out of people that have given in some way to the fandom in a unique way. Fable Fire and Fizz Otter were the guests of honor that year. Fable Fire, of course, designs a lot of shirts, and Fizz Otter is a laser engineer. Coming into the convention, Fable Fire hadn't been feeling too well. You know, she wasn't able to make it. You know, and then we had Fizz, and he gets in, and he's feeling, his voice is a little hoarse, and he's like, guys, I don't know. Am I gonna, I know I've got some panels and stuff, but I'm gonna try to rest up and see what I can do. He kind of camped out in his room for a little bit and came out, and his voice was almost entirely gone. And it was one of those, oh, crud. But he powered through it. He did his best. He had to hold that microphone a little bit closer, but he did a great laser show for us too. I remember walking into the ballroom going, why aren't people coming in yet? And he's got one of his lasers wide open and he's soldering.
And, it sounds like Fizz Otter.
Yeah. And my jaw just hit the floor going, oh no, what else happened? He's like, no, it just needed to adjust how this one works. It'll be fine. 5 minutes, and held him to his word. 5 minutes, he had that laser up and running, and people were coming in. He did a great show. We realized after that year how much people like lasers, and I like to blame him for it, that the fact that we have two very nice lasers.
I am a cat. I can confirm that this is something I like a lot.
Anyway, but so yeah, speaking of things people like, what's up with the ice cream social? Like, whose idea was that?
So when we came back to Orlando, part of the thing, you know, I mentioned it, that,
oh right, it's Florida, it's hot. Okay, it's got Florida, it. All right, moving on. No, I'm kidding.
No,
kidding. I'm sorry.
We mentioned that hotels come with different ways for them to make money, and one of those is a food and beverage minimum. When we came back to Orlando, they said, great, you can come back to Orlando. Here's a great hotel for you to be at, but you need to spend this much money. We said, well, you know what? Let's do a reception for everyone. And it's Florida, it's hot. How about ice cream? And let's do it by a pool. It's caught on. I look at that bill every year and just go, how much did we spend on ice cream and desserts? Oh, dear.
I must say, different cons have different things they offer. FWA might have these cool new wristbands, and you don't have to wear a badge. Megaplex has ice cream and cookies and cake. That's the kind of fur con I want.
So, yeah, you have ice cream and cake, and also you have two fursuit parades. It's interesting. I thought at some cons, fursuit parades are sort of, I don't know, at least from my perspective, seem to be falling out of fashion. Why do you guys have two of them?
You know, Yappy Fox is actually, he's our president. He handles the business side. I handle the convention side. He is actually the person that started the fursuit parades at Anthrocon. We've wanted to continue that as you know, it is difficult, and I can understand why a lot of conventions are moving away from it. It is by far the one event at almost any convention that requires the use of almost every single one of your volunteers just to make sure that the hallways are clear, that people are walking through the right path. Originally, the second one, which was kind of our dead dog fursuit parade, was impromptu, unannounced. It would just be a quick tweet or something saying, hey, we're going to do this real quick. Come on. We know that people really like the opportunity to show off their suits. Others really like the opportunity to see all the suits. And so we want to continue that as long as we can.
What are some of the other amazing moments, like things that could only happen at Megaplex? What stories come to mind?
Well, I would have to say last year we had a family that was staying at the hotel. They were with Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I actually tear up a little bit just thinking about it. We had a young gentleman who was actually here to go to one of the parks. And he saw all the fursuiters. And he said, can I do this instead? And the Make-A-Wish got in contact with us, and we said, of course, absolutely. We'd be more than happy. We took him and his, I believe it was his brother and mother around and walked them through Dealer's Den. Several of the dealers gave them little gifts. He got his own fursona. I believe it was a pit bull named Tyson because he likes Mike Tyson. We brought him around to all the fursuiters. And what really got to a lot of us is one of the reasons why he was part of Make-A-Wish Foundation is he had a tumor that had basically robbed him of the opportunity to feel emotion. No happiness, no sadness, nothing. Just couldn't, had no emotion whatsoever. And it had been this way for the last 6 months, and there wasn't a lot of hope for, there was no hope for removing it and very little hope for actually reducing the mass or anything. The thing that really got to us is at one point he had such a huge smile on his face and his mother just looked at us and broke down in tears. It was the first time in 6 months that she had seen any emotion from him whatsoever. And we made his weekend, we made her life. It was just so amazing to be able to bring this to that family.
How does a moment like that make all of you as a staff feel?
Honored. This is why we do what we do. It's those moments where we can give someone something that they otherwise couldn't have, or that moment that really, you know, is the defining moment in their life, or the memory that they will cherish forever. They actually, both of them, have lifetime attendance to Megaplex.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wow, that's amazing. That is quite, must have been quite a sight to behold, really. That's pretty incredible.
It was amazing at closing when KP was telling all of us, and we were just all like melting and just like starting to tear up. It was pretty crazy.
I don't think there was a dry eye in that room.
I want to bring up security. One of the big defining things about a con and how it feels for people is the way the security acts. You know, how does security work for Megaplex?
Every convention wants to make sure their attendees are safe, first and foremost. And then, you know, secondary to that is that the convention is safe. Not everyone realizes, but there's reasons why we have the rules we have in place. Some of it's cultural issues about the area, and there's certain things that one city may not allow, another city is okay with, different ways people react to things. So no matter what, even if you had the same group going to every city, you're going to get different reactions. And it also depends on how much has gone on that day. If security is seeming like they're more alert than normal or a little bit more gruff, there's probably a reason for it.
I know some people who criticize even friends of my own, some of the larger cons, because they seem, you know, security walks around with big red shirts and they seem very visible. And there's other conventions where you kind of almost forget that security is even there. And I'm just curious, like, how much of that do you think is tied to scale?
Security is one of those things that really doesn't scale well. A lot of our security teams are entirely volunteer. The larger the convention, the more people there are, the more people the individual security people have to deal with, of course, but also the more space they have to watch. The larger the space, the more security people you need. Nobody wants to be the bad guy. And so it's hard to find people who want to do security. And when you do find people that want to do security, may not always be the right person. Military is a great example. There are a lot of people that come from the military. They have that very military viewpoint. And while that's really great in emergency situations, it doesn't always translate well when they're trying to talk to an attendee during a calm period. We have brought in police because, you know, we are at a size where we would be amiss not to have police on site. You know, we gave them a list of, hey, this is what we are. This is what you can expect. Here's a link to our website. And I know the sheriff that managed, well, the I believe he's a sergeant. You know, I said, hey, would you manage the officers that are going to be on site? And he said, sure. The day before the convention, he was kind of chatting about it, and they said, oh, well, what is this? Well, it's an animal thing, and there's going to be costumes. And so he said, you mean a furry convention, Sarge? He goes, yeah, I think that's what they said. And they go, Sarge, you don't know what a furry convention is? He goes, no. So they go, oh, well, here, let me show you.
Oh, no.
And the first thing they do is go to Google.
Oh, no.
And search furry.
Oh, no.
And I don't recommend doing that as a way to introduce someone to furry unless you really know how they're going to react. Oh. But he came in the next day. He told me about it and said, honest to God, I don't know what you've gotten me into.
You're working a change man, huh?
And,
yeah.
You know, honestly, the officers that were on site had a blast. They enjoyed every bit of it. And the thing that really surprised me is they said we were the most polite and thankful people they have ever worked around.
That's awesome.
They said every 20, 30 feet, they were getting stopped. Thank you for everything you do.
Wow.
And they were just absolutely shocked. And they're fighting over who gets to come back this year.
Well, speaking of who gets to come back, is there anything that you pick in an individual that makes them fit for security at Megaplex?
A lot of our security have actually been with Megaplex for quite a while. Sometimes security is a high-stress job. Often that is where we need the most people. We try to have conversations with them. And we actually make all of our staff reapply every year. And the reason why we do that is, one, if we realize they didn't really work out in the department they were in, gives us an opportunity to say, hey, have you thought about AV? Or have you thought about registration? But it also gives them an opportunity to say, you know what? I'm kind of feeling burnt out. I'm going to take a year off. And that's really an important thing because people don't realize...
Make sure that they're comfortable with the job, right?
Yeah, because burnout is a major thing in conventions.
People who are helping to run the event that don't actually want to be there.
Right.
Whether they realize it or not, I mean...
It gives people that chance to evaluate, is this something I want to do again? And not everyone says yeah.
You talk about... all the sorts of work that go into security for a con, you start thinking about all the things, you know, that AC has ever said, Kage or KP have ever said about, you know, it is the job of the con to protect the identities and the safety. You look at nightmare scenarios like Chlorine Con, and security was a chief part of why that evacuation and the whole staging of that went as well as it did. Where were you when you heard about the shooting at Pulse?
I was sitting at home. I don't think I had gone to bed yet. I got a few calls and some messages and like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Why, what's going on? A lot of us really knew a lot of people that either frequented or people that were there that night. And it really hit hard for a lot of us. But as a senior member of a convention staff, it's one of those things of, you know, we don't really have time to grieve or worry at that moment. We need to get all the information that we can that's correct, and that's a very important thing. There's a lot of people reaching out to you and you know, have you heard from this person? You start playing phone tag with people. And all while we're trying to get all the information, we definitely had some emergency meetings. It really hit home for a lot of us. And it took a few days before many of us could actually have time to grieve, to really understand how we felt about what just happened. Because you immediately, as a leader, as a convention chairman, as a head of security, first thing you do is, what happened? Could this happen at my event? How can I prevent this from happening? We made a lot of changes. We got a lot of emails asking, how are you going to prevent this? The honest to God truth is, all of our board members are FEMA certified in multiple different certifications. One of them is active shooter. We also have all of our security staff take the active shooter course, which is an online course through FEMA. FEMA actually has quite a few free online courses. If you make a rigid plan, it's useless. You need to have a plan that you can adjust as needed as you go. Things may not go exactly right, and it may not go this way, or it may be something you've never planned for. So how do you plan for that? You know, we tell a lot of our staff, we tell all of our staff, if there is an emergency, do not get on the radio unless you have something that absolutely has to be said at that moment. Things like, I've got a person over here bleeding. That's a pretty major thing. But I've got someone who's trying to find their friend. Assist them, but don't come over the radio because you might be stepping over someone who does have an emergency.
When something like a tragedy like Pulse happens and you get all those emails and Telegram messages, what does that responsibility feel like, that kind of weight on your shoulders?
Any good senior leadership will tell you that in the moment, you don't think. You don't think about stuff like that. You do what you need to do, give the answers that have been thought through, and you don't act off the cuff.
Do you remember that year, the tribute that was done to honor the victims and the families of that Pulse Club event?
Yes, in memoriam. In memoriam, it was two fursuiters who were doing a flag performance, and they dedicated it to the victims and the families of victims of Pulse. And they came back and reperformed at closing ceremonies. It was absolutely breathtaking. It's almost indescribable. It definitely helped me feel like someone cared.
We owe it to ourselves, to keep ourselves safe. Do you think moving forward from such a tragic event like that, do you think we do enough?
Well, there's always some risk, but the most important thing is to remember that not everyone's the next shooter. A lot of people, with all the school shootings and Pulse and everything.
Hysteria.
Yeah. It's becoming unreasonable. Blaming everyone, worrying that everyone's going to be the next shooter doesn't help anything. It makes it actually harder to secure a convention. We get probably around 100 emails a year of people saying, I think this person's going to be there.
So what, people just kind of saying, can you ban this person?
We get that a lot. And it's, I think this person did this. Well, thank you. But are they making a claim against the convention? Are they saying they're going to do something? If they're saying they're going to harm someone else, has that person contacted the police?
You're not the police of the community. Right. Yeah. So, you're just trying to protect yourselves.
Right. So it takes our time away from concentrating on actually making sure that nothing does happen during the con. It's time that we could be writing procedures. It's time that we could be talking with the police. But we're responding to an email of someone who wants us to ban this other person because they didn't finish their commission.
Oh my God.
There's so many important things in this world. We're all in this together. We all should be looking out for each other. But there isn't one person that's going to be the person that's going to fix everything.
Looking forward, you're making this space work a lot better for you this year. In broad strokes, what does the long-range plan for Megaplex look like?
We have some great things that are coming. Maybe a new hotel in the future. It's all going to be at closing ceremonies. So if you want to know, that's where you're going to find out.
You know, just in terms of scale, is there anything you're worried about there? Maybe when it comes to size or, you know, being able to find a venue, what are those challenges for you guys?
We're at a very strange size right now, so not very many hotels will fit us well. The bigger hotels aren't yet ready to work with us because we're not quite big enough. You know, we all also are worried about size. I think anyone, any convention runner is, because, you know, we have to run off of estimates. And none of us work 1 year out. We're working 2 to 3 to 5 years out. We've also got Disney here. They own a lot of hotels are on their property, and they're not too fond about having masked people walking around on the property. But, you know, we are getting to a size where we're starting to get to where there's a few more hotels. We are constantly talking with hotels. We're talking with the city's convention bureau. It gets very technical, but, you know, this is the things that we're constantly looking at just to make sure that we have a venue.
You know, some of your venues, as well as some of your side venues as well, you know, for overflow, have had revolving doors. And, you know, have you considered the amount of tour furries that you have?
Oh,
and even
God.
If, you know, there are options, you know, next to the revolving door, you can open up a door.
Oh, my
have
God.
Have you considered whether or not that's offensive to the tour community? And does that factor into your choice of venue?
Why did I agree to the show?
So you want to know if we think about the
if
tourists.
Revolving doors are acceptable to you, yes. or the tourists.
Go
yes.
away. Mm.
Furries come from
They're
everywhere.
All night.
To everyone listening, I apologize. What would you say to people who are planning events in the fandom?
My first response is always run. Run as fast as you can. I do actually help several other conventions, one in upstate Florida. So, you know, if you want to start a convention, good on you. Just make sure you know what you're getting into. Make sure you're doing it for the right reason. Don't do it because you want fame or you want everyone to know your name, because chances are that's not going to happen. Also, you're not going to know everything, but make sure that you're listening to the people who do have the answers for that.
What are some of the things you guys internally are still trying to work on? And maybe what are some things that you guys are kind of on top on that you maybe wish more events out there would prioritize?
We've got the dealer's den kind of figured out. A lot of conventions, their dealer's den is either too large and the dealers end up not making much as they could at another convention that maybe has a better dealer to attendee ratio. Our dealer's den lead really has done an amazing job at figuring out, you know, who to put where and where to put them to get people to walk around the entire dealer's den and really see what people have.
I have a question. This is a bit of a personal interest, unlike all the rest of these. I'm trying to, forgive me. The best way to ask this. Why are cats the best species?
Why are cats? I don't know about that.
Let me rephrase that. Why are cats the best species?
bark.
Why are cats the best species?
You're gonna keep asking me that until I give you the answer you want, and I don't think you're gonna get it.
Okay, I have a much, much less controversial topic to talk about here. Okay. So moving away from ridiculous, silly controversy, pineapple, yes or no on pizza?
Definitely. Definitely on pizza.
Wow, what the hell is wrong with you people?
Is there something you wish that attendees would value in cons that either they don't seem to care about or something that Megaplex provides that you think attendees should be expecting from other cons?
Attendees tend to ask a lot of really good questions, but I think more often than not, they don't ask why, they assume why. And
wow.
Yeah, and I know that's a loaded answer as well.
No, that's a beautiful answer.
So, I mean, it's a lot better to say, hey, why are they doing this? Why did FWA switch to wristbands? Why did MFF set up their registration a specific way? Why didn't it seem like there were as many rooms available? Or why did the registration system go down? Not just immediately make assumptions and blow up their social media.
And worst, assume that the staff aren't aware or don't care.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, we care. Many sleepless nights.
Is there a question that you wish we would ask you, or a question that you wish people in general would ask more?
I wish people would actually ask me more standard questions. I mean, the questions you would ask a friend. Most people see me now as the chairman of Megaplex, so it's always a con question. And sometimes I just want to step away from the con.
I don't imagine you can step away at all. But would be happy to treat you to something on the ground there.
I'll tell you what, you find me and we'll each pay for each other's drink.
Right before we go, give us the who, what, where, when, why, and what the most exciting thing for this year is going to be with Megaplex.
Obviously, we're in Orlando, Florida, August 3rd through the 5th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Orlando at SeaWorld. It's a mouthful, I know. Our theme this year is Phoenician Islands. This year, I think the biggest thing is going to be our amazing list of panelists, including Alkali, who's coming for the first year.
It's going to be you and Alkali on stage with alcohol, isn't it?
I'm afraid to be on stage with that man. Have you seen how tall he is?
More than that. Are we talking with the top hat on or not?
Well, the top hat's part of his body, so yeah, I guess you have to count it.
It's a required part.
Of course. And where can people learn more?
Come to our website, Megaplex, MEGAPLEX, con.org.
Thanks, Eno.
So I gotta say, for episode one, that is quite an intense thing to wrap up. But it also makes me really excited for some of the crazy stuff that we're going to have planned going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys don't know the behind the scenes is that's a 40-minute that's a 40-minute supercut. Like, me and Paradox lived all of that. That was we talked to Hino for 3 hours, and you literally just got the greatest hits of that. It was even more intense for us, but I gotta say, the dedication absolutely comes through, and he meant what he said. If you want to run an event, run away as fast as you can, because
yeah,
this is what you're biting off a chunk of, you know?
And despite that's his feeling, it's the opposite feeling for me in terms of wanting to go to the con. I kind of want to go to Megaplex now.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, this is an event that's getting better and better. And, you know, you even hear about what events like Pulse have done to it. And having been there when all, you know, when the Pulse stuff went down and when the In Memoriam stuff fired off, it was like, it got very, very real, you know. Even after Chlorine Con, there wasn't, you know, fortunately, nothing of the kind of the magnitude that happened with Pulse happened at Chlorine Con, but it was pretty real. But I gotta say, I still, given all those things, have more fun at Megaplex than almost any other con I go to. So it's definitely a highlight. Dude, it's our first freaking episode, and we're going to talk to so many awesome people. I'm really freaking excited.
I am as well, especially because there is so much variety of emotion in people who are involved in this culture and in this community.
And information, too. Like, and next week, we're speaking to, next episode, we're speaking to TC, who is like InfoSec passion personified.
Yeah, and I just like getting to hear him go crazy about all the stuff he's passionate about is really exciting as well. So I hope it's something people enjoy, and I hope to keep doing it because I myself am just loving it. I think this is so much fun, and I'm actually glad we finally decided to start the show that we've been planning for like a few years only.
If it sounds like we don't quite know what this is going to be completely yet, it's because we don't, and that's the exciting thing. Definitely tweet at us or leave us feedback wherever you can. Paradox's Twitter is at CTCWired. I'm at @rar_Jesse, J-E-S-S-E. Tell us, what kinds of people do you want to hear on this show? We'd love to hear your feedback.
Yeah, comments, questions, concerns, we'd love to hear it. Suggestions as well, going forward, especially as we start to increase the variety more and more on the types of stuff we do here and experiment with our format a little bit.
You can learn more at furcast.fm.
Thank you for listening.